all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Friday morning, April 26th, 2024. I'm Pat Breitlove. Nice to have you along. Greg Bach will be here in just a sec as well as I make some adjustments here on my monitor because I can't figure out who moved my computer. Kind of like when Greg came in and some of his buttons had been pushed on the board. We're trying to get a nice clean start here. All right, where was I? Oh, I was looking out the window and saying it's another beautiful morning to have you here up north. Sunrise coming up. It is just hot pink over the eastern side of Lake Wissota here as we wait for the sun to rise. And wherever you're joining us, we're glad you're here as we head into a Friday morning where you can reach us at any point. Our phone number is 855-75-CIVIC. Put it up on the screen for the Facebook folks, Pat. Okay, there you go. 855-75-CIVIC. You can use the Civic Media app as well to call or text us, get a message to us, find out what's on the radio stations throughout the Civic Media radio network. Here's what's coming up this morning. We're going to talk to Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil about developments out of Arizona, of all places. One is to repeal an 1864 abortion ban, and the other is to prosecute the fake Trump electors from 2020, leaving Wisconsin as possibly the only state where nobody's aware of whether there is a criminal investigation going on or not into the fake electors. Also, he'll talk about the Supreme Court hearings about Idaho's extreme abortion ban and the amount of legal immunity a former president is allowed. And we're going to be talking a lot about that in our second hour, former President Trump's court cases, where U.S. Supreme Court justices yesterday sounded depressingly like typical far-right politicians rather than justices when it came to looking at the case of a former president trying to stage a coup. And so we'll talk to former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel about that, and we'll talk to Mark Jacob about the media coverage of that as well. So all that, plus we've got a little sports. We'll talk to Dan Schumacher. If you notice, the green and gold shirt, the green and gold flannel shirt is on today because, you know, Packers and the draft and everything else. So we'll look at who the Packers drafted first. And much more. Weekend forecast on the way. Today's history lesson. So we're glad to have you here. We're going to tell you the temperatures right now at 6 a.m. around the state. Look like this. It's 41 up here on Lake Wissota. Hayward's in at 44. Park Falls, 38. Wausau, 37. Green Bay's at 40 degrees right now. La Crosse, 47. Wisconsin Rapids, 37. Oshkosh has 43 degrees right now. It's 41 in Madison, and it's 39 in Waukesha, Wisconsin, where we find the one, the only, the man, the myth, the legend, and every other stereotype and what's the word I'm looking for?
Greatness.
Greatness that I can think of. Greg Bach.
Hello.
Mr. Bach, how are you?
I'm doing well. Am I the one and only? I feel like there are more of me.
Cliche is the word I was looking for. I was looking at how many cliches could I, the one, the only, the man, the myth, the legend, you know him, you love him, you can't live without him.
You can't stop him. You can only hope to contain him.
There we go. There, going with the Sports Center reference. Did you look in at any of the NFL draft last night?
I definitely saw things come across my phone, but I was working, so I could not indulge.
Well, let's talk about all the work that you did for a moment, because I'm at least 2 minutes late on saying, hey, Greg, what's at the Laughing Tap this weekend?
Oh, Pat. Well, it's Friday, and this weekend you've already missed the first show, which was last night.
Oh, wow.
We have for four more shows, and unfortunately, Friday and Saturday early shows are sold out. So we have 10 p.m. show tickets available. We have headlining a Mr. Michael Longfellow, who is a current cast member of Saturday Night Live.
Wow.
Yeah.
Look at you.
Yeah. I'm fancy. he's fantastic. He's very funny, very dry, very low key, but just says hilarious things. And also very, very nice. So lucky to be working with such nice comedians throughout the years. And Michael is no exception. He is very, very funny. Tickets for the 10 p.m. shows are available at laughingtap.com. Those are $22 online, $25 at the door. No drink
minimum. What's the drink minimum? None. Did you say none? You said none.
See, folks, Pat, here's the thing is when you go to a comedy club, and this is I'm not down in other comedy clubs. You got to make your money, and this is the model, but you got to buy two drinks. So you're buying your tickets. Then you're buying two drinks, maybe paying for parking. If you're parents, you might be paying for a babysitter.
Mm-hmm.
When you come to the Laughing Tap, you could spend the money on the tickets. You could sit there and be like, I don't drink. I'm just going to enjoy some water. We'd be like, hey, do your thing. But we have a great bar. We have tons of Wisconsin beer, tons of Wisconsin spirits, homemade cocktails, homemade mocktails. There's something for everybody.
You're such a good host. You're just like the quintessential Midwest comedy club here.
I mean, I would make snacks. Like, I'd have like
cheese curds.
Yeah,
I'd have some cheese curds for him.
There's a seven layer salad over there. There's a Jello thing over there.
Jello. Yep. That would be cool. Yeah, would that be like a little potluck comedy club?
Oh my gosh! I would honestly, if you brought a dish to pass, I'd knock like $5 off the ticket.
Careful.
That is not any food, that is neither any endorsed food inspectors or official.
That might be. Yes, that's not actually what's happening. I'm calling up the radar right now just to see if we're getting much for rain moving in. No, but it is a monster blob across Iowa, Minnesota, South Dakota, and it's going to work its way through here, and it is going to be one wet weekend. So why wouldn't you want to be in a nice dry comedy club?
Exactly. Thank you.
Other indoor places like that. So yeah, getting back to the draft, I saw that the Packers were drafting 25th, which meant I was not going to see it, and I did not. I saw like the first, maybe seven or eight picks. Especially, of course, I had to see the Bears, try for yet another quarterback and see if they can make that one work, whereas the 30 before that did not. So we'll see how that works out. So I have to look it up here and tell you that the Packers, who by the way have 11 picks this year over the seven rounds, they got a pick from the Jets for giving them Aaron Rodgers, and we got one from sending Rasul Douglas to the Buffalo Bills. But there was only the one first round pick, and so according to the Associated Press write up of a guy named Jordan Morgan from Arizona, they write, as he developed into an offensive lineman capable of getting drafted in the first round, Jordan Morgan said he spent plenty of time watching former Green Bay Packers left tackle David Bakhtiari. Now, Morgan may get a chance to fill Bakhtiari's old spot on the Green Bay offensive line. The Packers departing from their usual strategy of targeting defensive players in the first round by selecting Morgan with the 25th overall pick. Morgan says he'd like to emulate the skills that helped make Bakhtiari an all-pro.
Just hopefully don't emulate his Twitter injuries. Skills.
Or his Twitter skills, yes. Exactly. Now, I did say the Packers are going to be busy here. The rounds 2 and 3 get started this evening out in Detroit, and then rounds 4 through 7 get started at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning in Detroit. And by the way, if you didn't hear it already, the Green Bay hosts the draft next year, April 24th to 26th. I'm sure every hotel room for 200 miles is probably booked by now, but you never know. So we've got in the second round picks 41 and 58, and then the third round, 88 and 91. So out of the first 91 picks, the Packers have 5 of them. So maybe something good will come of that. I don't know. But it certainly looked like a nice party in downtown Detroit last night. It looked like everybody was having a good time.
That's great. I love it. Yeah. And I'm watching my Bears friends get way too excited.
They always get Justin Fields. Is it Mitchell Trubisky? This is the one.
Okay.
Maybe someday, hey, we'll hope for the best for you.
Will we?
No, yeah. We really don't. And I completely whiffed. I mentioned this time yesterday, the Brewers had a day game, and catch it on these civic media stations. But then I had that whole job thing. And by the time I thought about it, the game had just ended. And what I missed was backup catcher Gary Sanchez with an eighth inning pinch hit two-run go-ahead homer in Pittsburgh yesterday, leading the Brewers to a 7-5 win, a split of the four-game series with the Pirates, and a road trip where they won 5 out of 7 games. So now they're home for the next 6 games. The first 3 of them this weekend will be against the New York Yankees coming to town, and you can hear that game, Brewers and Yankees. Pre-game starts at 6:35. News from the Center and Richland Center, WRJN and Racine Kenosha, Oshkosh Air Support, 98Q Country in Park Falls. Then there's the Bucks. They're probably not going to have Giannis tonight for Game 3, and now it appears we may not have Chris Middleton either, who had a sprained right ankle that kept him from practicing yesterday and puts his status in doubt for the series with Indy, which is tied at a game apiece. The game is this afternoon, late this afternoon, actually. Pre-game starts at 4 o'clock this afternoon, and you can catch it on News from the Center in Richland Center, Lake Erin Amory, 98Q Country, Park Falls, locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids. A lot to take in today between the NFL draft, the Bucks in the playoffs, Brewers playing the Yankees. There's just a lot going on and a lot to follow, but I kind of like that, this where seasons kind of overlap here.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot to choose from. And none of it's golf, where I might fall asleep, in the recliner. We're actually going to get some work done around the garage again this weekend.
The only thing I don't like about overlapping sports is when football starts and all the Brewers fans are like, well, I'm done with this now. I'm just going to go talk about the Packers nonstop for 3-4 months. Yes. Hey, there's still a solid month and a half of regular season play. Let's do this, people.
Well, that depends. Does Christian Yelich have a back injury, or how many more starting pitchers can we blow through?
So, Christian has got his already. He's got some tenderness. Mm-hmm. But
don't we all?
Right. I don't play baseball, and my back's tender almost every day. So,
we are going to, after the break, spend the next several minutes outlining some of the illegal or unethical conduct of Donald Trump, right-wing U.S. Supreme Court justices, and the new head of the Wisconsin Republican Party. Lest you think everything's going to be negative, stick around, because when Kia Vakil joins us in about 15 minutes, we'll pivot to some of the positive things that are actually getting done in politics, and it won't be too hard to guess who's getting actual work done to help Americans. But first, we review all things Trump and Republicans coming up after the break, here on Up North News Radio, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Well, before you do anything rash, dig this. Everybody plays the fool.
Now, we're going to have today's history lesson in about a half hour from things on this day in history today, April 26th. But there are a couple of things that the anniversaries take place over the weekend. And I wanted to make mention that tomorrow is the anniversary of that fellow, the lead singer of Main Ingredient, with Everybody Plays the Fool. And that would be Cuba Gooding Sr. Folks know Cuba Gooding Jr., the actor, but Cuba Gooding Sr. Was born this day, or tomorrow, I should say, in 1944, passed away in 2017. He wasn't the original lead main singer, ingredient. but became the main...
I'm sorry.
Laughingtap.com, everybody. Get the tickets now.
Oh, I'm not on stage. Thank God.
Well, you ought to be. But again, you're playing the role of the genial host. And we appreciate that very much.
I believe the title was Buffoon Clown Bach. That was what I was once called.
Put that on a business card. All right, let's get into unpacking some of the news here at 6:21. I'm going to start with a story out of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and the group Souls to the Polls, which on Thursday called for the removal of the new executive director of the Republican Party of Wisconsin because of his Election Day 2020 text messages, where he talked about getting Donald Trump supporters to basically flood the Milwaukee voting rights group Souls to the Polls with requests to be taken to the polls. The call by the group yesterday came after the Journal Sentinel reported on the text messages from Andrew Iverson, the new executive director of the Wisconsin Republican Party. But at the time, in 2020, he was the head of Trump Victory, a joint operation of the Trump campaign and the Republican National Committee. Souls to the Polls executive director Greg Lewis said yesterday that that news is the latest in a pattern of voter suppression and racism. And Souls to the Polls is there to offer free rides to the polls on Election Day. And Lewis said the organization will take people to the polls no matter their partisan affiliation. But, of course, on the eve of Election Day, there's always room for political mischief. And Iverson sent messages to Carlton Huffman, who was then Trump Victory's state strategic director, asking if they could get people to have some Trump supporters basically flood the lines and ask for rides to Souls to the Polls, saying, "Can't wait to vote for President Trump," wearing a MAGA hat. He texted, "I'm excited about this. Wreak havoc for the afternoon and make it clear they're excited to vote for Trump." In a statement responding to the call, Iverson said that the text messages were jokes and they weren't supposed to be taken seriously. And as for the guy he was texting, Huffman, he was fired from his old North Carolina job after his old white supremacist views came to light. He said the effort could have suppressed the black vote in the state. He now considers himself an anti-Trump independent. Will all of these revelations be enough for Andrew Iverson to step down as the new executive director of the Republican Party? Who's to say, but at least now you know a bit more about who the Republicans are trusting to put in charge of their state party. At the top of the ticket is former President Donald Trump, who is the presumptive Republican nominee, who has not been on the campaign trail much because he's in one criminal trial with others yet to follow, and was before the U.S. Supreme Court, his attorneys were, yesterday. And as written up by the New York Times, it says here in depressing fashion, "The Supreme Court's conservative majority appeared ready on Thursday to rule that former presidents have some degree of immunity from criminal prosecution, a move that could further delay the criminal case against Trump on charges that he plotted to subvert the 2020 election." What does that mean? It means what we've explained before is that the Court of Appeals, prior to the U.S. Supreme Court, took very little time to quickly say, "That's garbage. Presidents do not have unlimited immunity. We have checks and balances and rules for a reason. Get out of here with this." The conservative justices on the U.S. Supreme Court could have operated that quickly too, but said, "No, we'll take the case. We'll consider it." Then they waited many weeks. Then they gave these arguments yesterday that spent way more time on hypotheticals rather than on the actual criming that the then president was doing to try to stay in power, and now look like they'll render some kind of a split decision rather than saying no immunity at all. They're going to say, well, there are these things that are official acts and they should have immunity, and there are these things that are personal acts and they should not have immunity. And whether you think that's something that's valid or not, the upshot of it is that it's going to delay the trial, and so voters will go to the polls not knowing if the person who is on trial for trying to subvert an election is going to get elected president again, or if he's going to be found guilty of committing these crimes. Because if he gets elected president come November, he can make all of these charges go away, which again gets to that unlimited immunity dictatorial type power that he sure admires in other leaders around the country and sure wouldn't mind having for himself. And it was clear from the conservative justices' arguments yesterday, they are more than happy to help continue him down that path. Meanwhile, the criminal trial going on in Manhattan relating to hush money and, again, election subversion or interference. Today, we'll continue the cross-examination of the prosecution's first witness, David Pecker, the former publisher of the National Enquirer. Trump's attorneys will try to discredit the idea that there had been a plot to protect Trump during the 2016 presidential campaign. On Thursday, Pecker described his involvement in the suppression of stories on two different women who claimed to have sex with Trump. There was Karen McDougal, the former Playboy model, and the porn star Stormy Daniels, whose 2016 hush money payoff is at the root of this particular criminal case that led to the falsification of business records to the point where it was lifted to the prospect of a felony crime. Trump is charged with falsifying 34 different business records to cover up a $130,000 payment to Daniels. And again, those are the things that we know are going on right now. The election interference cases by special counsel Jack Smith and the one down in Georgia have been tied up in part by Trump's claims of immunity. And then there's the classified documents case with all the national security secrets that were stored in boxes at Mar-a-Lago. And in that case, you have a Trump-appointed judge who is being extremely friendly to Trump and thoroughly slow-walking this case. So we will not have any revelation about that before this is all done as well. So it then falls to the voters. And it always was going to fall to the voters to say, you're going to have to make this decision. And there are people who are going to vote for Trump, even if he was convicted of all of these things, and say, you know, it's the deep state. You know, they're in for a dime, in for a dollar. I get that. But there are still moderate voters out there. There are still voters who are not nearly as plugged into the news as you are, for example, listening to a morning radio show like this. Those folks, they depend on people like you. They say, well, what do you think of this story, or what do you think of that? And, you know, our hope is that as you hear, not just here on Up North News Radio, but on all the shows across civic media, that you've got an opinion, you formed an opinion based on what you're learning here that might help guide some of those moderate voters to making good choices for American democracy. Kia Vakil is next. You're up north. Welcome back on this Friday morning. Today's history lesson coming up in just a little bit. Then in our next hour, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel will help us talk about the legal week in Donald Trump's world. And here to talk about it as well for us in this half hour, Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil. Kia, how are you?
I'm pretty well, Pat. How about yourself?
You're lying. I know. We both have had such a drinking from the fire hose kind of week, but you're putting on a brave face. So thank you for that. There's just so much. Let's start with the first Supreme Court story, and that would be Trump seeking monarchy status, in terms of absolute immunity. Look, to me, I've said before, I'll say again, I think this was way less about immunity than it was the conservative justices helping Trump run out the clock. But arguments were made, so I can certainly ask you what you thought of the legal arguments and, whether this is going to go anyplace.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's my thought on this is all, the Supreme Court is made up of 9 judges. 6 of them are Republicans, and they're all acting like they're Republicans before they're judges. I saw a Vox writer make that point, and I think that's the best way to sum it up. It appears that they are going to buy into, at least to some extent, the Trump argument that presidents have substantial immunity from committing crimes. That depending on how broad that ruling is, they could totally toss out the special counsel's case into Trump's 2020 election subversion. They could send it back to a lower court to somehow try to figure out what he can be tried for and what he can't. The too long didn't read summary of it is basically it's a partisan hatchet job, which is exactly what anyone who's paid attention to this court could have told you would happen. Because with rare exceptions, these conservative judges are pushing a Republican agenda, and that becomes ahead of any sense of actual adhering to law and order,
yes,
as they so much like to say they do.
And again, they can at some point come back and say, oh, no, President Trump can't do this, that, and the other thing. But, wink, they've run out the clock, before the election. There was a surprising amount of fluidity in the other case that the justices took up, and that was the very extreme abortion ban in Idaho. And whether it runs counter to EMTALA rules at the federal level, we had a good chat yesterday with Dr. Kristen Lyerly about that. But it was intriguing, Amy Comey Barrett leading them, that there mm-hmm. were a couple of justices that kind of surprised me. Or maybe it shouldn't surprise me that they wouldn't go for the most extreme measure, that might actually be a bridge too far for a couple of these justices.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that this is even a debate, that, like, you know, it's worth saving a woman's life, even if it requires an abortion, that's a debate, is mind-boggling. And from what I saw, you know, the Idaho state government, the attorney general defending this case, or the lawyer making this case to the court, was pretty offensive and sexist.
And Justice Alito was right on his heels, you know?
Yeah, I mean, look, Justice Alito is never one to finish second place in that category. You know, it is not a surprise to me that Amy Coney Barrett, who, you know, she is extremely conservative. She's clearly anti-abortion, but, you know, that may even be a bridge too far for her, basically deciding at what point a woman's life is worth saving. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know how this case will end. I have learned to not predict the level of cruelty the Supreme Court is willing to impose on people. But there's at least some hope they will, you know, uphold this law, but I would not bet on it is what I would say ultimately. And what that means is that if they, you know, overturn, it's called EMTALA for short, which is this law that basically says that, or, you know, this regulation that says, you know, in states where abortion is banned, in the case of emergency, hospitals that receive Medicare funding should still provide abortions. If that's overturned, it means in states with abortion bans, women will just die. Like, that is what will happen. We're already seeing in Idaho that, you know, OBGYNs are leaving the state. Doctors are leaving the state. Six women have had to be airlifted to hospitals because of the state's abortion ban and lack of care across parts of the state. That will spread to other red states. We will just see women die. We will see them die in massive numbers as healthcare systems get worse. And this is the future that the Supreme Court could foist on us if they don't uphold EMTALA.
All right, so that takes us to Arizona and the headlines about, you know, the 1864 abortion ban law, which was recently upheld by that state Supreme Court. There were efforts to repeal it, but some Republicans, you know, pushed back on that. So what's the status now? Is there actually progress on repealing this? And if so, what's the Republican angle on this for going along with repeal?
Yeah, so there is progress, which should be good news for anyone who cares about women's bodily autonomy and reproductive rights. On Wednesday, the Arizona House passed a bill that would repeal the state's 1864 abortion ban. And so what that would mean is if it passes the Senate, it would revert to the state's 15-week ban that was in place up until that is actually currently in place. It would just prevent the 1864 ban from going into effect. So if that happens, abortion would remain legal up until 15 weeks in Arizona. And then in November, voters in the state could decide if they want to make it a constitutionally protected right in the Arizona Constitution. But, you know, this is not a guarantee. The Republicans control the state Senate. They also control the state House. Three of them flipped to vote to repeal the law. Because they know it's political disaster for them in November in a swing state, and it could cost them the presidential race, the Senate race, a couple House races, and control of the legislature.
So when people say, why would they do this? Why would they go to the 15-week ban where they are? When we wonder why the 15-week number was chosen, we have to remember the reason. There isn't one. They just plucked a number out of the air. 15 weeks, 16 weeks, 14 weeks was proposed in Wisconsin. None of it is based in medical science whatsoever. Can't stress that enough.
No.
So also in Arizona, in another interesting twist this week, the fake electors there and some other folks are now facing charges by the Arizona Attorney General which makes Wisconsin perhaps the only state that we don't know yet that fake electors are actually going to face any kind of criminal accountability. So what is the news out of Arizona on the fake electors?
Yeah. So in Arizona, which is one of the main, I mean, Wisconsin as well, but one of the handful of states where they really pushed aggressively to try to overturn the 2020 election, 18 people involved in the conspiracy to overturn the 2020 presidential results in Arizona were indicted by a grand jury on Wednesday. They faced charges, including forgery, fraud, conspiracy. Two of the people charged are state senators, Jake Hoffman, Anthony Kern. These guys are as far right as it gets. And so, you know, they face charges now. They were indicted, and it comes after a 13-month investigation from the state attorney general. And so this is a big deal. You know, it also includes another person indicted was the CEO of Turning Point USA, which is a, you know, far right student organization, that's very closely aligned with Trump. And so there's also former Senate candidates who've been indicted in Arizona, the former chair of the state Republican Party. And so this is huge because it's accountability for trying to overturn a democratically elected president and an election and the will of millions of Arizona voters. So we'll see what happens, but it's a start.
Well, again, any measure that could conceivably lead to accountability for clearly illegal activity to overturn an election is a welcome development. And I don't have the exact number in front of me, Kia, but if I'm not mistaken, this attorney general in Arizona was only elected by something like 250 votes, in case you're wondering if your vote counts. I mean, 250 other people don't show up, and these fake electors, you know, get off scot-free.
Yeah, she won by 280 votes. And it was so close. And her opponent was a Trump-endorsed, you know, extreme far-right Republican who's now running for Congress. So these elections for state attorney generals are hugely important.
Very much so. All right, well, let's get into, we've talked about how former President Trump is facing legal setbacks, you know, at the U.S. Supreme Court. Of course, his hush money election interference trial has been continuing this week, hearing from the former publisher of the National Enquirer. So while he's busy, you know, being on trial, President Biden is back on the campaign trail, kind of as we talked about last week. But this week, he gets to mark some new achievements on behalf of workers and consumers. So what else does he get to talk about now on the campaign trail about these new activities?
Yeah, so there were a handful of huge new rules and regulations finalized this week. First, the biggest one probably being the finalization of the Biden administration's rule banning non-compete clauses. So what these are is basically, these are agreements that employers force workers to sign that basically ban them from starting their own business or leaving for a competitor or leaving for a job in the same geographical region for a certain point in time in the same industry. And so these things are, you know, outrageous. They affect about 30 million people. That's nearly a fifth of the workforce in this country. They affect everyone from journalists like you and I to barbers to tech workers. It's pretty wild. And so for the past year, you know, roughly a year plus, they've been taking public comments and going through the rulemaking process, and they've now announced the final rule that bans the vast majority of these, with the exception of some senior executives. It bans previous non-competes. They'll have to be thrown out. Future non-competes cannot be enforced. And this is an incredibly popular move. And what it will do is it will allow more people to start their own businesses. It will raise workers' wages. It will dramatically reduce spending on healthcare costs. And there's an expectation that it'll lead to more patents being filed and more small businesses. And the way you know it's popular is because the people who oppose it are, you know, it's good policies because pretty much the worst people in American politics oppose it. And so there's already a lawsuit against it from a company run by a Republican mega donor and former Trump tax advisor. So that's the first thing. Second thing is they finalized a rule that makes 4 million more workers eligible for overtime pay. You know, workers eligibility for overtime is based on, you know, federal regulations for salaried employees. Right now the threshold is, you know, around 35,000. So if you make above that, you can't get eligible, you're not eligible for overtime. Under the new regulations, that number will go to nearly 60,000 starting in January. And so that's just millions of people who are going to get a potential pay bump. And that's a big deal. So these are really big policies that will help millions of American workers.
Yes, they will. So then you had the lookout for consumers, of course, with airline fees and junk fees and yep. and all of that. The real tangible things that, you know, a president can point to rather than some of the more ethereal, you know, arguments that are out there about the border or, you know, inflation writ large. It's like, no, here's something tangible that is going to benefit you.
Exactly. And, you know, you mentioned the airlines, you know, what that rule is that got announced on Wednesday, I think, was basically, you know, if your flight is delayed or canceled, airlines have to offer you a cash refund instead of a voucher. And so, you know, they also have to be transparent about these like sorts of hidden fees for baggage or for seats. They have to tell you that up front. And so basically it's a way to just make the whole process transparent and that you're not getting screwed over, which is, you know, people hate scams and airlines kind of scam you nowadays. So it's trying to really rein that in.
So much nickel and diming. This is just a sample of what Kia puts together every couple of weeks in his newsletter From the Front Lines, which you can get through Substack and get it at Courier Newsroom. You can go to fromthefrontlines.news. There's a lot in here, Kia. A lot of it is a wrap up of the work that you're doing with other Courier Newsroom outlets around the country.
Yeah, I do put it together every 2 weeks. It's a pretty good summary of what our work is like. I encourage everyone to go subscribe it. The best way to do so is just to Google it, probably, or to go to I would just Google it. But thank you for that little plug.
Absolutely. I mean, it's an exceptional newsletter. If you want to see what is happening around the country and compare it to what we're seeing here in Wisconsin, you could not find a better digest. Courier Newsroom National Correspondent Kia Vakil. Nice to catch up. Have a good weekend.
You too, Pat. Thank you.
We got today's history lesson coming up in just a bit. You're up. Never not going to turn this one up to 11. I don't remember if I told you this, but my Paradise by the Dashboard Light story. And no, it's not a story similar to what's in the song. I mean, a story about the song.
I was like, whoa.
Careful. No. And I don't know how long it lasted, but maybe it's still going on to this day. I doubt it. But during my years at UW-Eau Claire, the dorms up on top of the hill, which were Horn and Governors and a couple of others, I think Sutherland. Anyway, there was like this tradition almost that Friday at 5 o'clock, somebody put speakers, their stereo speakers, in the window and blasted Paradise by the Dashboard Light. It was like the unofficial start of the weekend.
That's way better than I want to bang the drums all day because I've just heard that song too many times. This is great.
Yes. Yes. Oh, this, nice. This song. And actually, while it's great, you know, Meatloaf doing this as a, you know, rock and roll band.
Yeah.
I still love a good dueling pianos set, you know, in a yeah. club someplace. And there are some people that can do this, you know, with the dueling pianos. And if they've got, you know, a woman who's singing along with them, just so good. Would love to see more. I haven't been to one of those for a while. But wait.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I was in a band a long time ago and our lead singer had a very Meatloaf-esque voice, very dramatic, very like in your face. And if we wanted to get on his nerves or if he was being an annoying lead singer, which most of them are always, we would call him Pot Roast. He hated it.
You and the nicknames, I tell you.
Oh my God. Hey, Pot Roast is on stage. Don't call me that. All right. Move some equipment.
All right. I suppose for today's history lesson, we should tell folks why we're playing this. It was on this day in 1977 that legendary rock composer, the late Jimmy Steinman, premiered a play at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. It was a futuristic rock version of Peter Pan. The play was called Neverland, having nothing to do with Michael Jackson. 5 months later, three of the songs that he wrote for that show appeared on Meatloaf's Bad Outta Hell album, including Paradise by the Dashboard Light and Two Out of Three Ain't Bad. And to this day, Bad Outta Hell is still, I checked last night, still on the list of top 10 best-selling albums of all time. After all these years, yeah. Like,
I don't think, I mean, yeah, there's big selling songs now, but like back in the day, like I don't know if, and I, the young kids can understand how big this album was, and like Peter Frampton's album and Rumors, like these albums were like, oh, they're just in our life now forever.
Yeah. And when we talk about, you know, still top 10 in album sales, we're actually going to have something in just a moment here about the top movies of all time as well. So hang on for that. But first, while we're speaking of good writers, besides Jimmy Steinman, there's this guy, William Shakespeare.
Never heard of him.
Yeah, baptized this day in 1564. His actual date of birth is unknown. Carol Burnett, 91 years old today. And still in, what is the show? Is it Palm Royale or something like that?
Yeah,
she's
the Palm Royale.
Kristen Wiig. Yeah. I want to see that because everybody's been raving about it. Channing Tatum is 44 years old today. Gary Wright was born on this day in 1943. He passed away about 7 months ago at the age of 80. He gave us Dreamweaver and this hit. All right, this next part's going to make you a little upset or disturbed or, you know, just throw up a little in your mouth, but bear with me. It was on this night in 1977 that the most famous club of the disco era opened for business, Studio 54, on West 54th Street in New York City. Among the VIPs in attendance, Donald Trump and his then-wife, Ivana. Coincidentally, on that night, while Trump was at Studio 54 with that wife, over in Yugoslavia, a little girl was celebrating her 7th birthday on that very same night, which means that today, Melania Trump is 54 years old today. So, congratulations, Melania. I don't know what you wished for on that 7th birthday, but maybe you should have wished a little harder. On this day in 1986, Van Halen proves there is life after David Lee Roth with their album 5150, the first with Sammy Hagar, hits number one.
And thus began the ultimate battle between good and evil, right and wrong. Van Halen or Van Hagar?
Do we know where you come down on this one?
I'm a fan of Van Halen, the Lee Roth days, not because I like David Lee Roth that much. I think he's kind of a weirdo. But I think the guitar playing that Eddie did on those early records is phenomenal. It's
no doubt there.
Just wonderful.
All right, so now let's get to the movie part. On this day in 2019, Avengers Endgame was released. How's that been 5 years already? It has raised about $2.9 billion.
Yeah.
It dethroned James Cameron's Avatar, also right around $2.9 billion, as the highest grossing film of all time. However, if you adjust the numbers for inflation, Avatar is actually ahead of Endgame, but the top of the chart, and nobody's touching it anytime soon, Gone with the Wind from 1939. Ticket sales were so off the charts that if you adjust for inflation, it's box office way ahead of anything else that's been made in the modern era.
That's okay. Course, so, holy cow. Well, adjusted domestic is $1.85 billion.
Mm-hmm. That was in, if you're on the same page I was looking at, you have to go down to like 2019 dollars because they haven't adjusted them all for 2024. So that's why the number seems a little lower than what the current movies are right now.
Gotcha.
But yeah, if you look at the charts and then you look at just the gross number of tickets that were sold.
Yeah.
And remember, this is the height of the Depression. So there wasn't much for entertainment. Everybody was hearing about this movie and, you know, saying you got to go see it. And of course, people did. But again, it was Avengers Endgame that was released this day in 2019. A lot of things on the national calendar today. Today is Arbor Day. It's Audubon Day. It's National Pretzel Day. And I don't know that everybody gets a chance to, you know somebody who makes a fresh pretzel. There was a husband and wife in Chippewa Falls here. And when I was a candidate a long time back, they would bring these fresh pretzels in now and then. I mean, just to die for.
I have a friend named Maria Pretzel. I'm going to wish her a good day.
This is National Dissertation Day, National Garage Day, which is fine because my project in the garage is going to wrap up later today. This is Remember Your First Kiss Day, or maybe you shouldn't, depending on the circumstance. This is No Makeup Day, Stop Food Waste Day, and World Women's Wellness Day. So happy days to all of you who are connected to one of those in one form or another. When we come back, we have a busy second hour ahead, including former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel and Dan Schumacher.